side of the pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance. How are we doing?
Sunday night.
This is different. And by different, I mean what we used to do.
Yeah. But it's literally been like well over a year.
Probably, yeah.
Minimum.
We got into a nice groove of doing Monday night.
Yeah. I screwed it up.
You blew it.
My bad. I got work stuff tomorrow night. Meeting with the fans, Supporters Council, very first meeting of the FC Cincinnati Supporters Council.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty big deal in our eyes. We're kind of looking at it as a great opportunity for us to communicate, not just with the season ticket holders who we regularly communicate with, who are like our supporters groups, but also the larger audience.
So are you meeting with just the Supporters Council or multiple – or? Also other people.
So we have a supporters group meeting that we regularly have.
Okay,
to kind of work on stuff that they're doing in the Bailey, which is our supporters section if you're not from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And then we've started the supporter council, new for this season, as
sure.
a way to reach out to the entire stadium. So we have people from all over the stadium, all the different sections, different backgrounds, different ages, different genders, different racial profiles. I mean, we really try to get all across the spectrum of FC Cincinnati fans so that we can get a feel for what our fans want to do. So that's what I'll be doing tomorrow night, which is why this is all coming to you a day earlier than normal.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right.
Now you have the backstory.
Now I know why.
Yeah. Everyone really cared to know. But
yeah. It's different though. Sunday night, mm-hmm. we had to jumble things around.
Mm-hmm.
We have a guest, hopefully, that will join us next week that mm-hmm. – was possibly going to join us this week, but we'll get them on next week, so it'll be
fun times. We're also working on a little side project too. Hopefully we'll be having a special USL show-ish type thing previewing the season to come.
Yeah. We're still not really sure what it looks like. We just kind of know what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's about still, you know, kind of fleshing
it's putting
all that
it together.
So, hey, we've started on that.
Stay tuned for that, and hopefully this doesn't end up being an empty promise.
I mean, if nothing else, we at least have one interview. We'll just release that. I'm like, there it is.
There it is.
Isn't it great?
Whole preview.
A whole 10-minute preview about one team.
So look forward to that. But the best part about us doing this today is we're following this up immediately after an amazing day of football, at least as far as like one cup competition is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever it's called, Cup.
Yeah. Now, previously the League Cup, previously the Carling Cup.
I feel like I just finally worked out of my brain, hey, don't call it Carling Cup anymore.
Yeah.
Call it Capital One Cup. But wait, that's not that anymore either.
No, it's definitely not that. So we had a great final to talk about there. And then today we're also going to touch on Major League Soccer. We're going to get into our annual preview where Jeremy and I make predictions that we really regret in 8 months' time.
Yeah, these are not like take it to the bank, call up your bookie predictions. Mm-hmm. This is save this audio to make fun of us in December.
Yeah, if you ever question our like legitimacy as pundits, if our fantasy track record isn't enough to know what's actually going on, this is the best way to really kind of hold things over our heads and say, you guys don't know what you're talking about. So look forward to that later on in the show.
Can't wait.
But as we had just talked about a couple minutes ago, fantasy. Let's quickly get into that.
Yeah, fantasy was back. Mm-hmm. Not everybody playing matches.
Yeah.
You had like four teams not playing in the league this week.
Yep.
Because of the, what you would call it, cup.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were smart, you made adjustments to your roster. If you are not smart, here's hoping you didn't get hurt too bad.
Yeah, hopefully not. I luckily adjusted my team ahead of time, was able to make changes, and had a pretty good week because of it. Pretty rare for me to have good weeks, it feels like, of late. But I am back jumping up, I think, 12 places. My notes are taking a second here to load up. But I think, 12 places to 53rd. So I'm nearly scraping that first page.
And can I assume how you made this jump?
How would you guess?
Did you captain Harry Kane?
I didn't.
Oh, really?
Okay. Harry Kane's not actually even in the team that I have right now. Yeah.
Ooh.
Can't fit him in. Can't fit him in.
Can't fit him in.
Well, I'd have to blow a wild card. I don't have any more, really, to blow up my roster in a way to actually spend as much to get Harry Kane on my team.
Okay.
So, Either that or I abandoned someone who did do me good, and that was Diego Costa. And I actually used that triple captain play.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe there's like three things you can do, the bench boost, the triple captain, and then like all-out attack, I think, is the other one you can do.
I have no idea what any of that, what you just said is.
Well, those are options that are available
to you
in the
game. Should I be using these things?
Yeah, you
should.
Is this
how you win?
They could potentially give you extra points. So I just had a feeling that Diego Costa was going to score against Swansea, and he came through since that's what he does. So
if you triple captain Harry Kane,
you would have had like 900 points.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would have been the play. How did I do?
You fell 7 places. 45th. I'm now only like 12 points behind you.
I didn't captain Kane, but I at least had him in my lineup.
Well, he probably did you a bit of good.
Apparently, yeah. Not good enough, though.
At the top of the table, Tequila Nachos. Six straight shows still at the top. There is your Premier League fantasy update. A further fantasy update, the MLS League is back. I'm not going to read you the code here because literally no one's going to listen to this and be like, ooh, there's the code.
Let me write that down.
I will.
Hey, hand me that pen.
I will tweet it out a few more times before the start of the season. If you were in the league last year, you're likely already in. So glad to have you back. Feel free to embarrass us in this respect as well. We'll give you updates weekly throughout the course of the rest of the season.
All right, let's get to that cup that has a name or doesn't.
The EFL Cup these days.
Yeah, so the English Football League Cup.
Yeah, is this like temporarily without a sponsor, or do you think they'll actually have a sponsor? Because the Premier League went away from it for a little while, and I thought that was like a permanent thing, but apparently it's coming back. We've talked about this recently.
Right.
It's going to be the Cadburys.
Cadbury.
Which is awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah. If we're not getting sent free chocolate because of this, I'm
going
to be really
disappointed. Cadbury soccer ball.
And I'm all for the EFL Cup getting a sponsor. One, so we don't have to call it the EFL Cup because it sounds terrible.
Do you wish it was the Crapital One Cup still?
I'd be fine with it being the Crapital One Cup.
What's a terrible company that it could be?
Ooh. Man, I don't. I mean, you could
the Puck a Pie Cup.
Yeah, the Exxon.
Exxon.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're probably. BP? Yeah, I mean, those actually seem pretty likely targets there. But yeah, I mean, you could probably think of a lot of pretty horrible companies you could choose there. Maybe just one-off individuals. The Pierce Morgan Cup.
And Arsenal would still lose it.
Yeah, they absolutely would. I think just to annoy Pierce, if nothing else.
Part of the draw.
I'm going to say this about the cup, and I don't mean this in any sort of disparaging way, and I probably say this every year when we get to the final for this particular competition, but this is still absolutely a tournament that you don't care about at all until your team's in the final.
Pretty much. I mean, basically...
Unless you're a little club, I suppose.
You know what? But though, like, even... I feel like Wickham definitely puts more stock in the FA Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Because the payouts are
significantly higher.
Significantly higher.
Right. But two, like, I think it is an opportunity for smaller teams. It's not unheard of for a team from like the Championship to make a deep run, or you know, a team from
League
One. Who
was it that? Oh, who was it that Swansea beat the year that they won it?
Oh yeah,
Bradford
City.
And they whooped them like 5-0. Bradford's run.
But they made it all the way to the
final.
Oh, yeah, it was incredible. So it is fun, and I think the little teams definitely take it as a bigger deal than some of the Premier League teams who routinely trot out reserves in this particular competition. But it's just one of those things that you, like when Spurs crashed out, I'm sure you felt the same way with Chelsea. How did you feel afterward?
Oh, well.
Don't have to worry about that fixture congestion anymore.
You know, you don't want to get embarrassed. No. That's the only thing you don't want. You don't want to get embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea didn't get embarrassed. When they finally bowed out, they lost like West Ham.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not that embarrassing.
You lost to another Premier League team. No big deal.
That's perfectly fine. Now, I'll say this much. When Spurs won it in 2008, which is probably the only Spurs trophy I've seen like the game play out live. Uh-huh. And I was really excited when they made it to the final in 2015.
What happened in that one?
Yeah. Well, I
wonder if I own, if only I own like a coffee cup that would remind me of that moment.
Is there a frowning Ledley King in the background of the trophy presentation?
No, but there is Jose, instead of just, you know, hanging out with the players behind like the, you know, the whole presentation that they bring out, the whole banner and he's literally on his back with his limbs up in the air, just kind of flailing
It's great.
And excitement.
That's fantastic. But yeah, long story short, it's just one of those tournaments that you don't really give a damn about at all. And Jeremy's now showing me a picture of this. And yeah, Jose is literally just laying on the floor in front of the trophy presentation. So good for him.
It made for a great cup.
Yeah. And today's final, despite it not being a tournament I really care about because Spurs are no longer in it and not in the final, was a fantastic final.
Yeah, you were wondering what we were going to get from this. Were we going to just see Manchester United just freaking mow down a Southampton side that's not used to being in the situation of being in a cup final?
No. The last time I think they were even in the final was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. The last time they won the competition was back in the 60s.
Mm, wasn't around for that.
Yeah, neither was I.
I wonder who the sponsor was then.
Like
Winston Cigarettes or something?
Probably. That seems very likely. Some other English cigarette brand.
So two things were going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Either United was going to win and it was going to mean whatever, or Southampton, as you just mentioned, wins a cup for the first time in forever. And so that's kind of the two things you were dealing with is like, who did this matter more to? Like Southampton, obviously as a club, and their history and their fans, like for them to win today
mm-hmm.
would have been monumental. I mean, even you were saying as a Spurs fan, like just winning a cup.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. Like to the Chelseas and the United and stuff like that, it's maybe lesser of a deal. So you look mm-hmm. at United and you go, like, was this super important? And I would actually say this was actually just as important for United as it was Southampton, because this was the first time that this new regime of Mourinho, Zlatan, Pogba, you know, that this new era, Manchester United, this is their first chance to actually do something.
Yeah. And
significant.
I think you hit the nail on the head there with the most important aspect of how I thought this game was going to play out was, I think you're right that this trophy would mean more to Southampton's fans than it would for Manchester United's fans. Manchester United's fans go, yeah, it's great that we won this, but we want bigger and better things.
Sure.
We expect bigger and better things.
And they expected bigger and better things to happen this year.
And I don't doubt that Southampton's players and management and the club itself wanted to win this trophy extremely. You know, there's no question in my mind about that. But Jose Mourinho does not fail at winning something in his first year in charge. You know what I mean? Like, he always, like, gets something under his belt to mm-hmm. use as a momentum builder yep. for his teams to go on and get that great second year, and then things all unravel in year three. But this is how Mourinho operates, and there is absolutely no way, and you could tell this by the lineup that he chose, there's absolutely no way that Mourinho wasn't looking at this game as a must-win type of game.
I mean, this was a side that had just played in a Europa match
mm-hmm.
just days before.
Yeah, and here they were. Trying to win a major competition
with rolling out the A squad.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get to that A squad, because it was Zlatan
mm-hmm.
Bookending this affair.
Yeah.
Well, first we got to mention Southampton possibly getting shafted early on.
Offside flag rolling out.
Yeah, I feel like this rule has been.
It's been
alive and well this week.
It's contentious, to say the least. We saw it in FC Cincinnati preseason game.
There was even shouts for it in Chelsea's match. Mm-hmm. Their opening goal, Hazard was in an offside position, but wasn't making any move towards the ball.
Right.
And it was rightly called how it was supposed to be called, that it was just a goal.
It's too much gray area. It's too fuzzy. You almost wish that it was a more concrete rule the way that it used to be.
Right. So the rule that we're talking about, and if you saw the match, you know what we're saying here. Obviously, if you are in an offside position when the ball is played to you and you play that ball, it's offside.
Right.
But let's say you're offside in front of the goal, but you don't play the ball. You don't really make a real play for the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You're just kind of right there. You're not really you're not exactly, you know, obstructing the keeper
mm-hmm.
in any way. Is it offside? Is it not? Now, the rule used to be in the past that, yeah, you see that getting called a lot more.
Right.
But that was supposed to kind of gone away, right?
Yeah, so now it's you have to directly impact the play.
Right.
But what does impact actually mean here?
And so, like, if I'm making a run on the left side of the goal and I'm offside, but the ball doesn't come near me, but the keeper, because he sees a guy coming in on the other side, shifts towards me, am I suddenly now making an influence on the play?
Potentially. It's really an interpretation role, like how the referee interprets the play unfolding. And I think that's what is the harshest element to this. And look, it's more like that's been more harshly defined now. This is always kind of how it's been for the last 10 years or so, where if you were like in an offside position and you were walking maybe away from the ball, you could make the argument that you weren't really involved. But now it's like, even if you're inside the play itself, but you didn't actually touch the ball, there's the possibility that it could potentially not be ruled off. So it's just, it's really ambiguous. Southampton had a goal ruled out because of this, which is really unfortunate, because that one goal may have been the difference maker and actually preventing them from losing this tie. So regardless, United end up getting the lead pretty early on in this affair.
Yeah, yeah. So Zlatan with the free kick to give United that lead. They score again.
Mm-hmm. Lingard,
yeah. Getting in the action. And you're thinking, wow, cruising. We're heading close to halftime here.
Mm-hmm.
2-0 lead at half. Pretty good.
Right.
But wait.
Things changed.
Things changed, right? At the death of the first half, with the new signing at Southampton. This guy has kind of gone on the radar as far as everyone talking about the transfers that were done in January. And we talk about how there's really no impact players brought in. Wrong.
Yeah.
Manalo Gabbiadini.
Gabbiadini.
Scores right at the death of halftime.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it 2-1, and then not shortly after the second half whistle starts, he gets a second.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's 2-2, and the weather's terrible, and both teams feel like they have a grasp of this one, and they can win this, and it was awesome from that point on.
Yeah, I mean, literally, both teams were throwing everything forward. There was very little solid defending, mostly because bodies were so far upfield. And it made for thrilling football to watch. Zlatan getting that header in the final, literally dying moments of the game. His movement, I mean,
it's still... ball just hung up in the air.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, it was placed perfectly.
Credit where credit's due, Herrera.
Is that Mata? Who sent that in?
It was Herrera who played it in, yeah. And it was a brilliant ball in. I'm all about the brilliant cross. I'm a player who never really ever scores goals and took a lot of pride in setting up goals with good crosses in. That was the type of cross that really awes me. But the movement that Zlatan showed on that particular goal to just fold into the space that was available to him and find that goal was every bit as good as the ball in. And that's one of those, if you're a young forward, like trying to learn the game, watch a guy like Zlatan move. He's really often criticized for like how he doesn't work hard enough off the ball and how he doesn't do enough aside from score goals, which I literally don't understand how that's a problem. Watch the way he moves and finds the space. He really does a lot for his teammates in ways you don't necessarily expect. And it's things like distracting defenders and pulling them away into space so that other people have room to operate. And this was one of those examples of how he gets himself into the spaces that he needs to score. And it was just a fantastic finish, a great way to cap the match. And
when you saw that ball come in, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Like it just all of a sudden just like time stood still and you just saw this ball. And it was heading straight
you knew
where it was going. You go, oh, there he is.
You didn't even have to like guess at who was going to be the one trailing and getting on the end of that.
Yeah.
And mind you, there are other really good headers in the game there. Fellaini was in the match by this point. United have a couple other big, Pogba's not too shabby in the air either. Like, there was plenty.
He was somewhat shabby the entire match.
Well, he didn't have his best of matches,
for sure. He got his pocket picked by guys I hadn't even heard of.
Yeah. But you could expect to see other people, but there's literally only one person anyone expected to be there, and that was Zlatan. And, of course, he did Zlatan things and won United a trophy.
Yeah.
Still, how anyone continues to think he is not a good player for United and wasn't a good signing. Guys, he literally, like, almost single-handedly won a trophy for him today.
Yeah, pretty much did. Scored 2 of 3 goals.
Yeah. But the closing 10 minutes of this match is spectacular. Southampton had multiple chances.
Oh, they nearly scored a half dozen times. Mm-hmm. United had a bunch of chances as well.
Yep.
I mean, it was end-to-end stuff there, that final, 20 minutes. And, good, made for a good cup. That's normally terrible.
Yeah. So congrats to United for winning a trophy. Big deal for not necessarily the fans, but for United as a club. And it's the kind of things that you want to see the manager that you've given all the keys to your car and house and private bank accounts and literally every other key that you would have. You've given them all to Mourinho. These are the type of results you want to see from him to show that it was worth the trouble of actually bringing him in.
It's weird. You look like where we're at right now, like United, on the whole, just looking like they've figured it out in a lot of ways.
Right.
City clicking on all cylinders. They didn't get to play a match this week. This was actually supposed to be the Manchester Derby.
Yeah.
Today.
Weird.
But that didn't happen. But City clicking on all cylinders. And you look at those two teams and you're like, if either of those sides could have either A, been more consistent with what they're doing, mm-hmm. or B, figured it out a little sooner, we have a lot better title race than we currently have.
Yeah, exactly.
And we see this all the time. This is classic what happened with, like, an Arsenal or something like that, where that second half of the season, February on, you're like, oh my goodness, this team's amazing. Where was this team earlier in the season? They would totally win. They're totally the best team out there right now.
Yep.
And that's, you look at City, you look at United, and you go, wow, these guys look great. But unfortunately for them, they haven't been doing that all season.
Yeah, and it remains to be seen if they can close out the rest of the season in that same type of form. So let's talk instead about the league that did also take part this weekend. And talk about the team sitting at the top of the table. Chelsea, boys.
So really only two of the top teams were in play. Liverpool will play on Monday. They'll play Leicester, which that looks to be a bit of a walkover at this moment. Yeah, but
more than likely.
Let's start, with Chelsea getting a 3-1 win at home against Swansea. Our buddy Peter Wilt was there.
Yeah, good for Peter.
In one of the suites, hanging out with his new friend Demba Ba, he's working with to potentially bring a NASL side to San Diego.
Yeah.
I believe Demba Ba also said, like, Eden Hazard is also possibly part of this investment side.
Yeah, so, and there is potentially maybe they were meeting with him. Another San Diego NASL investment group, and potentially for USL. And then there's their whole MLS bid, which may or may not be connected to any of these things. So, okay. But
San Diego Soccer still around?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think they are. Maybe as an indoor team.
Like Warren Barton still like an investor of that?
Potentially.
All right.
But
good deal.
But this match, 3-1 for Chelsea sounds like it was a pretty easy affair, but things were actually pretty tight for Chelsea throughout the majority of the first half, and things were knotted up 1-1 at halftime.
Yeah, a frustrating first half for Chelsea fans, as this match should have been put away in the first half. Should have been put away early. Mm-hmm. Chelsea had opportunities. They had the ball, but really struggled. They finally get a goal through Cesc Fabregas, who was getting granted a rare start in league.
It was his 300th Premier League appearance, by the way.
And no Spaniard has made that many appearances.
In the Premier League. Pretty big accomplishment for a guy. And he capped it right with actually a vintage Cesc performance. It was kind of one of those ones where you're like, oh yeah, that guy was like one of the best midfielders in this league for a long time. Great goal that he took, actually hit a post later on in the match as well. So
that goal he scored, he actually cut off a pass. It was actually a pass intended for his quasi-countryman, Diego Costa. Mm. And instead of Fabregas runs onto it and is able to, almost looks like he gets it tangled in his feet for a second there, but then is able to fire it home. Right, though, before halftime, free kick from some distance given to Swansea and Llorente on the end of it. Llorente, a guy who allegedly was rumored to almost signing with Chelsea a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
As a, someone potentially being brought in during the January window to shore up a striker position that has a guy in Michy Batshuayi who I feel is capable enough, but for some reason, Antonio Conte has been not convinced.
Yeah.
Because even in some of their cup matches, he won't even start.
He's just like, no, not doing that.
1-1 at the half, and I'll be honest, I was extremely frustrated with that.
Yeah.
Second half, though, Chelsea keep pounding away. Finally, and you know, Fabianski had actually a fantastic match,
mm-hmm.
made a lot of saves. If it wasn't for some of the heads-up plays that he made, this game would have been a nightmare for Swansea. But he commits a bit of a howler as Pedro's shot dips right at his hands and bounces through his diving arms right into the back of the net, and then from there Chelsea pretty much just put the chokehold on the match.
Yeah, I mean it was like all the air had been let out of Swansea's balloon,
right?
And they, to be fair, Paul Clement had them defending fantastically mm-hmm. in this match.
Yeah,
taking their chances when they had their opportunities. Clearly, they capitalized on it right at the end of the first half.
Well, but you're right, that third goal showed that they were completely...
They were just toasted at
that
point.
It was textbook. It was Eden Hazard dancing, just bobbing and weaving his way through the box.
Man.
And then just cutting it over to Costa, who just fires a missile from 5 feet out.
I love when Hazard gets into those positions down on the goal line. And you know that he's going to drive towards that line.
Yeah.
He's going to get by the man. Mm-hmm. And then that cutback to find... To find him was just fantastic. It was such
he
a severe...
He puts the ball kind of right on Costa's hip, really. Because Costa just pulls his foot out and just hits
it
from
through.
The side. And
yeah,
absolutely fires a howitzer from close range. And so job done for Chelsea. They move at the moment there. They move to 11 points. That mm-hmm. became 10 points because the other team in the mix at the top of the table... Your Spurs did all right today.
Yeah, for the second time running, they absolutely undid a Stoke City team who are mostly a decent team. They're not sexy Stoke necessarily anymore, but
that, I mean, that you have to be an extra kind of bad to give up four goals in the first half of a match against anybody.
Yeah, and Spurs could have had more in that time frame.
Oh, easily.
Not to say that Stoke didn't have their challenges as well, but it easily could have been 5 or 6-0 to Spurs in the first
mm-hmm,
half.
Mm-hmm.
And we all kind of thought everything was going to fly off in the second half, too.
Yeah.
And it was typical, you know, get your four in the first half and not really go much harder after that point. But Harry Kane getting the hat trick, his third hat trick this season, third in his last, I think, six games.
Yeah.
He
got the assist on the fourth, right?
He also had the fourth.
Dele Alli.
Yeah, he did. So hell of a day at the office for Harry Kane. His second goal of all of them was the one that was just unbelievable. There was a ball kind of dinked across the top of the box, and it was across his body, and it was bouncing, and he just perfectly hit the ball, nutmegged one of the defenders, and ultimately went in. And it was one of those things, I tweeted this out, and got a little bit of resistance afterward after tweeting it, but Harry Kane has like
from the actual resistance, or
no, not from the actual resistance, so just some resistance. but Harry Kane routinely does things that are insanely difficult and makes them look really easy in a way that no one else really can. And I had a couple people that were like, "Yo, like Messi makes things look easy," and I'm not.
Disputing
that Messi doesn't make
no
things
one's
look
making
easy.
That argument.
But what I'm saying is that Messi doesn't make things look easy in the same way that Kane does. Kane doesn't. He's not one of those guys that strikes you as like a top striker. You look at him; he's got like an underbite. He's like a goofy. He's got a weird lisp.
Yeah, he's kind of just like gawky looking.
Gawky looking
British dude
isn't super fast. isn't particularly like flashy. He's a prototypical Englishman in that he busts his ass the entire game and like flies around and does a bunch of work. But unlike every other English striker outside of Wayne Rooney in the last 10 to 15 years, Kane finishes purely. And he's one of those guys that just occasionally blows by someone when you don't think he's got that pace. And you go, how did he do that? Or he'll squeeze out of like a tight spot. And you're like, that guy shouldn't be able to do that. But look at him. Just look at him. He looks like he should be, I don't know, working in a mechanic shop. You know, like that's what you look at when you look at a guy like Kane. I feel like he's so underappreciated. Like, he's now above 20 goals for three straight seasons. He's now leading the league in scoring for the third straight season. How anyone doesn't rate him is literally one of the best strikers on the planet. And maybe this is like my Spurs, like, glass half empty type of thing. But I feel like he just doesn't get the praise he actually deserves.
Why do you think that is? I mean, break that down. Why do you think that is?
Well, the team he plays for is one of those.
Okay, so he plays for a team that's not known for rolling out the superstars of the, you know, soccer world.
Mm-hmm.
But does some of it have to do with the fact that there is, especially even over in England, there is just a kind of a self-defeating attitude towards British strikers and British stars?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They all think that they're, like, fatally flawed. Like, yeah. I feel like it's just...
They're just waiting for that striker to let them down horribly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and like, Wayne Rooney, it was breaking his foot every other time or getting red carded. You know, Gascoigne had personal issues that persist to this day. You know, just they're the top players. David Beckham never really did it at the international level. Getting sent off in really big games. Just their big stars routinely find a way to let the English down, and they're waiting for that shoe to drop for them. But you look at what Kane does. He works hard off the ball. He's involved in build-up play. He can score with left, right foot, his head routinely. He's a complete striker, and I'd argue that he's probably the most complete striker in the Premier League. Like, is there another striker that scores the goals that he does, works as hard as he does and build up and puts in as much work as he does on the defensive end of things? Like, I don't think there is a player in the Premier League, at least, that functions that way, if not the rest of Europe.
Paul Pogba.
Sure. Especially in today's match.
I think you made a lot of valid points there. I think it's weird. Mm-hmm. You feel like, here's a weird thing. If Harry Kane was an American, every American soccer fan would be like
gaga.
Like, I mean, just losing their minds. Like, you'd be a weirdo if you didn't own a Harry Kane jersey.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I mean, it would be...
It'd be like Donovan.
Yeah.
And Dempsey. And Christian Pulisic.
All together times
rolled
20.
Rolled into one. And times 20. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So... I think you're right. There are a lot of things that work against Kane, and it's not fair to him, but it's just the way things are.
Uh-huh.
Where he's just not recognized in a way that I think he should be. And I know I'm a Spurs fan, and I know I've got my bias here, but man, it's just one of those things. Today was one of those games where you really get to see him, and you go, damn, what a fantastic striker we have in our midst.
Yeah.
So Spurs, with a win... Still trailing.
Right.
We're not going to catch you.
You jump into second, though, obviously.
That's very good.
City has a match in hand. Arsenal match in hand.
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to. You know me.
Should we temp check it right now?
You want to temp check it?
Because you're in first. I'm in second.
Yeah. That feels good.
What's your temp check?
I'm still cautiously optimistic for the most part. Mm-hmm. I felt like I personally put a lot of weight into yesterday's match.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, you know, because the last league match we had was that draw with Burnley. And I was just like, we really need to make sure we get back on track.
Right.
And just assert ourselves, not look like we're getting complacent here at the end.
Right.
And after that first half, and it's 1-1, I'm sitting like, oh no, we've done it. We've become complacent. We're going to throw this away. We're going to Atlanta Falcons the crap out of this title.
Well, I'm glad to see that you've not done that, at least for your own sanity's sake. As much as I'd love to catch up, as I've already said, I don't think Spurs can. To me, it's the goal that I always say that I care most about more than just about anything outside of finishing in the top four, and that's just finish above Arsenal. That's all I care about. It's literally all I care about.
Could this be the year?
Maybe.
Well?
Maybe it could. We won't get to find out, of course, with Arsenal until next weekend.
Yeah.
Since they were on bye this weekend, thanks to the Capital One / EFL / League Cup /
My advice, don't leave it till the last match day.
Yeah.
I'd say go ahead and put that to bed if you can.
Spurs have this nagging history of crapping it up on the last day, literally the last day of the season. So
there were a few other matches. Again, not a ton because we did have two matches postponed because of the EFL Cup. Everton getting past Sunderland 2-0. Lukaku back on the score sheet. Everton looked really good in this one. Hull City, Burnley, 1-1 draw. West Brom getting past Bournemouth 2-1. Mm-hmm. And Watford and West Ham wasted most of my afternoon in a 1-1 affair.
Yep. Palace did get a 1-0 win this weekend as well.
Yeah.
Over
what? Middlesbrough, right?
Over Burrow. That drags them out of the drop zone. I know plenty in Cincinnati will be happy to hear about that since they have quite the following here now after last summer.
Yeah, that puts them up into the 17th, so they're 1 point outside. Leicester City, though, still to play. Obviously, they're playing Liverpool. The odds of them getting a point out of that match,
not very good.
Not great.
And they find themselves currently in the drop zone as well. So that's a little problematic for them.
Yeah, so your drop zone right now, Leicester, Hull, and Sunderland. That's 21 points, 21 points, and then Sunderland, 19 points.
You know, just when you think they are starting to get back on track, everything just kind of falls back off for them. So
apparently they were in New York City this past week.
Yeah, I saw that.
Training in Central Park.
Yeah, and
that sounds like a total David Moyes move of like, hey, wouldn't it be cool
if we did that?
If we went to Central Park
and had a training session.
Like, an idea he came up with while watching Home Alone 2 over winter break.
I'm glad that that's the
We
reference.
Should go there.
We should totally go there. Look how much fun Kevin McAllister had there. Do you think the pigeon lady will be there?
Can we stay at the Plaza Hotel? Does Trump still own it?
Maybe. That could be the case. They got a lot of heat for that over social media as well. Their fans kind of losing their minds. And I probably rightly so, in my
opinion.
Well,
it's odd because a lot of teams that weren't playing in the FA Cup last week took this opportunity to, hey, kind of treat it as a week off, kind of a winter training break.
Mm-hmm.
I think Liverpool went to like Dubai or Spain or something like that.
That's like the thing to do.
Yeah.
And Sunderland, well, they came across the pond. I don't know. Have you ever been on any of the grass in Central Park?
I've actually never been to New York City.
Okay.
It sounds horrible. I don't want to go.
Oh, you need to experience New York City. It's fantastic. There's so much about the city that's
worth
it.
You know what the city's full of?
What's that?
People.
You hate people. So maybe you wouldn't like it that much. But since you've never been and you are unlikely to go, from what I'm gathering, let me just tell you that I can't imagine that any sort of training that would take place in Central Park on any of the grass there would be to a Premier League standard. Like, can't imagine that would be the case.
I just hope that they were like jogging or like doing some kind of training session and they got moved because they had to film like a crime scene from like Law and Order SVU. Like, hey guys, we're going to need this area. We have to shoot the scene where they discover the jogger's body in the in the bushes.
Yeah, but we already paid. We rented this space.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Mariska Hargitay is right over there. We got
to
do this.
Yeah, the other thing that I would imagine definitely happened to them was loads of bums coming up and asking the millionaires for money and like asking them why they're playing that weird kickball sport.
Wouldn't it be funny if they, like, hey, do you have some cash or have some change? And they gave them just British currency. Yeah,
like 1,000-pound British notes, probably.
Like, this is not, I can't do anything with this.
Yeah. So, good for Sunderland for coming over here, bad for PR for Sunderland for coming over here.
Well, I'm bad for the fact that it didn't really help them get ready for their following match.
No.
Again, 2-0 loss to Everton.
Nothing gets you ready to play a match better than 2 transatlantic flights.
I don't know. Thibaut Courtois just, takes random trips to the Super Bowl.
That's true. And we're talking about how rich people travel, and I'm thinking about like my times flying to Europe.
Right. They're probably not flying coach.
No, probably not. Now that I'm thinking about, they're getting those comfy, awesome lay-down bed-type seats.
Oh, yeah.
There are a couple great YouTube clips out there if you've not seen any of the things that are on, like Emirates Airlines.
Planes
like,
that you and I will never be allowed
on. No, God, no. You know, the $20,000 seats that we will never sniff.
Before we go stateside, let's go Champions League real quick. There were a couple matches. We obviously need to mention them because there is, I guess, technically fallout from one of them, right?
Yeah, technically.
And
one of those is the match that falls tomorrow in the Premier League that it impacts directly, and that's Leicester City.
Yeah, Leicester City. So we'll get to it. We'll start with them. Leicester City losing 2-1 at Sevilla.
Good result as far as Champions League knockout stage things go. Away goal.
Yeah.
To your credit.
Jamie Vardy scoring that goal.
Sevilla, mind you, if you don't follow the La Liga at all, they're currently top of the table in La Liga at the moment.
Yeah.
So nothing to slouch at. They're a very, very good team.
Apparently there was a lot to slouch at because they fired Claudio Ranieri literally hours after this match.
So here's the thing. This was absolutely nothing to do with this result.
Sure.
I think this
was... Optics would be, you kind of go, oh, but they just did all right there.
Yeah. Someone wrote into us this week.
Why choose that?
Wanting to know, are there other teams that have had, been fired a coach after a fairly unceremoniously, type of loss in the Champions League?
I can think of one.
Who's that?
Chelsea got rid of AVB after losing the first leg to Napoli.
Mm.
They made a switch, brought in Roberto Di Matteo. It went okay. They went on to win the Champions League that year.
Right.
Finished sixth in the league, though. So, you know. So,
a downward spiral, yeah. But let's be completely honest. It was nothing to do with this loss and is everything to do with the Premier League and them rescuing themselves. Because as we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now, they are in serious shit. They're in trouble in the league. And everything that's going on with that particular team right now is geared about survival in the Premier League.
So let's have the conversation, though.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the snake?
There was a lot of speculation as to who the snake was.
Who snaked them out? Because apparently it was the players going kind of... The rumor is the players...
Like, that was the
push for this.
Yeah, apparently.
Some players push for this.
Yeah, so Kasper Schmeichel has been routinely fingered as the person
who was
kind of the ringleader on this.
And he had a couple interviews he gave where his answers were less than direct.
Yeah, he was very offended that people were accusing him of it.
He kept
outright
he goes,
asked,
I'm just a player. We don't have any...
We don't get to make those kind of decisions.
I understand maybe not every player has that sway.
Mm-hmm.
But don't tell me that players just in general don't ever have that sway.
Yeah, they absolutely do.
I'm pretty confident at this point that that's very much the case. Mm-hmm. We've all seen it happen, and it's not even something that's particular to soccer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't
give us that line.
No, we don't.
If that's your defense, you don't have one.
No, we don't need to hear that. I could also see, maybe some of the people you wouldn't necessarily expect. Maybe a guy like Danny Drinkwater, who's not having a good year.
Fuchs.
Fuchs, potentially, who's not seeing the team as frequently. They're just a Joa. But clearly, this was a player-faulted decision. And even if it's not the players that called for it, the players are the ones where the issue is. I don't think this was a Claudio Ranieri issue. You know what I mean? He was the one who literally got them through the Great Escape to the greatest Premier League title ever. And this year, it's not like his management philosophy's changed, right? There's probably nothing that's changed in that respect. the players probably, I think, just gave up. You know what I mean? Like, they took their foot off the gas. They weren't trying as hard. They were Premier League champions. There was no way Premier League champions would get relegated this year. This is a player's issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more shocking side of all of this is they fire a guy like Ranieri. It's Monday. They're about to play a game in the league, which is clearly what this was all about. Who the hell are they replacing him with?
Where does possibly Mancini? Former Leicester player.
That's true.
Yeah, he played for them briefly. So I feel like that could be a shoo-in move.
I mean,
or somebody terrible that's in the championship right now. One of the retreads. I don't want to get on my horse again about that, but mm-hmm. maybe one of those guys.
Leading betting for a little while was Alan Pardew.
Yeah, he's kind of in that group now.
Mm-hmm. So
he's been moving around too much.
Well, it makes the move even more curious. Like, why do you pull off that move if you don't have someone waiting in the wings? Like, them not having a manager for a few weeks isn't going to be something that's going to correct the issue. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that that helps you escape the situation you're currently in any capacity. Although, let's be honest, it didn't look like Ranieri was guiding them anywhere either.
Nope.
So
let's talk about the other matches in the Champions League.
They were great.
Juventus getting past Porto 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
This was Porto at home, so Porto hurting here, giving up two away goals there. I don't know if you did. You see the pictures of the marks, the wounds that Hector Herrera, the Mexican international, sustained?
No, I missed those.
From getting cleated in the foot.
Oh dear!
Literally looked like he took like a shotgun blast to his foot.
That makes me uncomfortable.
I mean, multiple like just giant gashes in his the top of his foot.
Awesome.
I don't know if he was wearing like baseball cleats, whoever it was that stepped on him, but yeah, that's pretty intense. Atletico Madrid getting passed by Leverkusen 4-2, and poo-poo on you for chastising me that Fernando Torres was not going to get in this match. Not only did he get in, he scored a goal.
I saw that, and I knew you were going to bring it up today, too, which made it even worse.
You got a yellow card like 2 seconds later.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But yeah, so again, that's Madrid getting four away goals. So they're in the driver's seat there, and then we have to move to what was possibly one of the better matches we've seen in quite some time from the knockout stages. Manchester City 5, Monaco 3, and Monaco had leads in this match.
Yes, they did. Monaco, we talked about this last week when we were previewing this game. Monaco are like definitely one of the better teams in Europe this year.
Mm-hmm.
The highest scoring team in Europe this year by far. They were over 100 goals like as of a couple weeks ago for the season, which is just a ridiculous stat to have. And they've really been high-flying, and they brought it to them. I think they were up 2-0 at one point against City.
2-1.
Mm-hmm.
Aguero making it 2-2. Then Falcao coming right back, getting his brace, making it 3-2 for Monaco. And then Aguero ties it up to get his brace. And then the last person you assumed would help City take the lead, the man that you could possibly credit for at least two of those Monaco goals, John Stones.
Getting on there.
Taps it in from the, you know, 2-inch mark off the corner. And then it was Leroy Sané at the end getting the fifth goal.
And, I mean, we saw these goals in the second half probably in like a 10-minute stretch. It was insane how quick everything unfolded. Mm-hmm. Literally,
so Aguero scores in the 58th, Falcao in the 61st, and then the 71st, Aguero scores again. A couple minutes later, John Stones. It was like a 10-15 minute gap there. 17 minutes there where you had four goals.
That's ridiculous. So by and far away, one of the most entertaining matches of the season. I don't know that we're going to get one that's better than that as far as the Champions League goes this year. But the Champions League will be back. Before we know it, the second legs are yet to be played. And who knows what kind of tomfoolery will unfold in that second legs. Because, look, this first leg was, and not just this week, but the previous week's games too, were outrageous. Like, this has been the best knockout round of Champions League football that I can think of.
Yeah.
Because we've had just these absolutely mind-blowing games. Some of which have been unexpected blowouts, which, shoot, those are just as good in my opinion.
Yeah. Let's go stateside, though.
Mm-hmm.
And let's hit it. MLS starts this upcoming weekend.
Insane.
We get to see our first look in MLS play for Minnesota United, for Atlanta United. They make their maiden voyage this upcoming weekend. Mm-hmm. Pretty exciting just on that front alone.
Yeah.
But as we talked about at the top of the show, we got to do what we always like to do, and that is make bold predictions that we will later regret.
Are they bold? I don't know that they're bold.
I feel like we make some bold ones, and that's where we cause trouble for ourselves.
All right. Well, let's start with what we typically do, and let's name the teams that we think are going to make the playoffs next year.
Okay.
Because it's a lot of teams. 12 of the, 24 teams that we have now will make it into this. That's 50%. So our odds are pretty good of getting at least, I don't know, half of these right.
Yeah, you get 6-7 right. Feel good about life. I'll start with my East.
Okay.
Red Bulls.
At the top? Is that what we're doing?
Today? I'm not doing any order.
Okay, no order here. This is just...
Red Bulls was not a bad shot for the top, though.
No, I think it's a good
one. Toronto.
Okay.
Definitely a good shot for the top.
Mm-hmm.
NYCFC. I think they're going to continue on their ways. They're obviously their makeup is a little bit different. I think they've replaced, obviously, like a guy like Frank Lampard. They went and replaced him with young players instead of just going out and getting another 37-year-old.
That's right.
That's helpful. I think Philadelphia Union are going to make the playoffs.
There's a good chat.
You know, I think they made some moves midway through the season last year that now they'll have a full year under their belt for guys like Bedoya to really shine.
Yeah, and they just brought in someone else too from the Premier League.
They brought in Gucci Onyewu.
Yeah, that's right.
Just brought him in.
And he's expected to be a starter as well. So, look, there's definitely a retooling that's going on in Philadelphia at the moment, and that's not a bad one.
Columbus Crew.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Crew are going to be back to back where they need to be as a good side, a side that's fun to watch. I think they got some stuff figured out again. I think they answered some of their gaps with bringing in some young, exciting players. Almost half their roster now is Ghanaian.
They got his national team. Yeah. I would agree with you.
And then the final pick. I know we talked about it happening a couple years ago with a new sign, getting in the playoffs that first year. It's hard to not see Atlanta doing it, though.
I mean, some of the names that they brought in for this particular team.
I mean, they
team.
Just went through South America and just started grabbing these 22-year-old, 21-year-old, 19-year-old starlets.
Yeah, paying transfer fees.
Yeah.
Bringing in guys that were playing in Europe for established sides. I mean, these are all things that we saw unfold for this Atlanta team.
Mm-hmm.
So I would agree with you. I was looking down my list as you were reading through your list, and actually I only had one team that was different.
Okay.
I also had Toronto. I had NYCFC, Red Bulls. Columbus, I think they just had an off year last year with all the chaos that was happening, and they couldn't really correct it. Instead of Philadelphia, though, I picked Chicago. I think they made a lot of good moves.
They brought that guy from Legia Warsaw.
Mm-hmm. Solinek, I think it was the name.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Nemanja something.
Yeah. So I think Chicago has what it is, but I also picked Atlanta. I think Atlanta is going to make it in, given all the firepower that they brought in for their inaugural season. So let's head out west.
Okay.
Should I do the honors on West and then
do the
honors
on West.
Go there? So in no particular order, Dallas, I think is, you know, last year's Supporter Shield winner.
It's a good bet. Yeah.
Oscar Perez, man, definitely some of the best out West. Sporting Kansas City, I think they're, you know, kind of exactly what you expect every year. Right, they're kind of the
guy that you always expect to be there.
You just kind of think they'll keep doing it. Portland, Portland have loads of firepower. Like, their roster is going to score buckets of goals.
Yeah.
So watch what they do this year. Seattle, I don't think there's really any way that they don't make the playoffs.
No, especially some of the moves. I mean, they're possibly bringing in
Kisuke Honda.
Yeah.
Which huge. Would be humongous signing. Now, he has been riding the pine pretty steadily at Milan this year. But,
right. But that's Milan.
Yeah, it is Milan. LA Galaxy, I think despite all of their offseason changes, departures, things of that nature.
Yeah,
I think
a lot of people are looking at it like, oh, they're really cutting back their budget. You know what? But when they have made big moves, mm-hmm. I really like it. The guy they brought in from Marseille, that guy's awesome.
Yeah.
That guy was a very integral piece to Marseille.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to blow up. I think he is going to have like a monster year.
Yeah. And then the last pick that I had is Vancouver. I think they've lost some things, but they did bring back Freddie Montero to the league, who I think is going to help steady them out a little bit. But I think it's a little bit of a wishy-washy one. So what do your Western picks look like?
Yeah, my only difference is I don't have Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is, and we'll get to it in our domestic whip around, one of the decisions they made in the last 48 hours as far as player acquisitions and transfers. I think, in Timmy we trust. I think if Tim Howard is in that side there, Colorado and healthy,
mm-hmm.
I think they still have a really good shot at continuing on as a serviceable side, you know, possibly getting that sixth seed. I don't see them as being anything prolific this year, but I think I see them getting in.
Okay. Awesome. So there are your picks. We were close enough. That means none of our picks will be correct, we will infinitely be as wrong as we possibly can here. Supporter Shield. Who takes the regular season crown this year in Major League Soccer?
Going Toronto.
I also picked Toronto.
Yeah.
I really did. I just don't see Dallas repeating, given that Diaz is out for the first half of the year. Toronto just, they've brought in some good missing pieces this mm-hmm. offseason. They
weren't lacking much.
No, they just barely missed out on that title last year. But I do think Toronto are going to be the ones carrying away it as well.
So does that mean, though, we're also in lockstep then on Golden Boot?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Who did you pick?
Giovinco.
I did not pick Giovinco.
Okay.
He struggled with fitness last year. Mm-hmm. You have to wonder if
True.
Maybe the physicality and fake surfaces occasionally that he has to play on here are maybe taking a toll on him. He's a little guy. It's tough to keep your body fit when you're a guy taking a beating in the way that he does, especially when you are a dribbler in the way that he is. I thought about him,
mm-hmm.
and then I thought about other normal picks: Wright Phillips, David Villa,
mm-hmm.
Chris Wondolowski. No, I'm being facetious, but
so who'd you go with?
I went with Ola Camara, the crew striker.
You know what? I saw a few people saying like, "Hey, I think the way that team's built, he could do it in the same way that Kai Kamara, was scoring goals at a crazy pace 2 years ago.
Yeah, and crew tend to earn a fair number of penalties for what it's worth. At least they have in years past, and you would imagine that might continue this year. And if he converts all of those,
unless Higuain, runs him off.
Which, who knows? But
that spot and then later the team.
I'm 100% okay with Higuain never taking a penalty ever again.
Okay.
And not just because of that incident, plenty of other ones that reaffirm that belief. But I think he has what it takes. And his return, given the amount of time he played with the team last year, was actually pretty respectable. So I think this is the year where maybe he makes a bit of a splash and could drag the crew upwards with him.
All right, that's our predictions.
Mm-hmm.
Excited for the season to start?
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's always a big excitement for Major League Soccer to be back.
Crew actually get to start at home.
Yeah, they haven't done that.
Week. I feel like they're ages. Always on the road.
Yeah, and usually for several weeks at that.
Yeah.
So, good for the crew to get an early home game.
Are you excited to see the two new sides come in?
I'm absolutely excited. This Atlanta team, I think, is such a wild card with what's going on there.
You feel like it could go really well, really, really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Or could once again be another disaster we've seen plenty of times.
Yeah.
Now, I want to hit one thing here with Minnesota United. Have you noticed what they're kind of doing? If you look at a lot of the players they're bringing in internationally, where are they from? Scandinavia.
Hmm.
They bring in all these Scandinavian players. Minnesota, as a state, demographically,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people from Scandinavia, Scandinavian heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Are you for or against professional sports teams having the makeup of their team reflect the city they're in like that?
I'm not opposed to it. I kind of actually like it.
I think it's cool.
I think it's reaching out to an audience that you know is there. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they buy into that is another thing entirely.
Right. I mean, there's sometimes where it's just a little too on the nose. I remember mm-hmm. in the final death blows of the Atlanta Thrashers organization before they moved to Winnipeg, Atlanta, a city with obviously a very high African-American population, they went out and signed. They had more... they weren't all African-American. Some guys were Swedish or whatever, but more black players on that one NHL team than any NHL team in the past.
Yeah.
So you've seen this happen before where people have done this to strategically kind of play into the culture, into the people in the city. We'll see if it works, though, for them.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first time that we've seen MLS teams try to do this. Mm-hmm. I mean... Chivas USA, let's just start there.
Right. I mean, they literally had a rule.
Yeah, exactly. But then you look at something like, you know, Chicago Fire, who in the past have had some pretty big name players from Eastern Europe, where mm-hmm. Eastern European countries have a pretty high population.
Right. I mean, look, we just talked about, they just brought in a guy from the Polish league. Obviously, mm-hmm. the Polish community in Chicago is quite large.
Yep. So, that's something that we've seen teams do before. Whether or not it's an effective strategy is open for debate. Obviously, Chivas didn't pan out.
No, that's for different reasons, I think.
But there are, you know, we've seen success in certain areas that way before. So, I like the move. It's now we just have to wait and see if it actually bears fruit.
Yeah.
So, that wraps up our tiny MLS preview for this year. Look forward to making fun of us when we recap those picks later on in the season, at the conclusion of the season, to see just how crappy we were at all this.
So that means when St. Louis makes it to MLS, they'll sign all blowhards?
I'm going to leave that one alone.
Let's go whip around domestic news. I mentioned it a minute ago. Interesting trade, to say the least, happening at MLS over mm-hmm. the weekend. Breck Shea heading to Vancouver for a guy that Vancouver was all about in Giles Barnes.
Yeah.
That was going to Orlando. Obviously, big pickup for Orlando, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Giles Barnes, former Premier League player, played as well for Houston Dynamo for a while mm-hmm. as well. Only spent 1 year in Vancouver after making his way up there from Houston. I think he's a great pickup. He's a good engine. He's going to give them a lot of energy. Breck Shea, I'm not really surprised that someone would want to trade away his rights. He just doesn't seem to ever produce consistently enough for anyone to really get anything out of him. And it'll be intrigued to see, and I certainly want him to work out, but I'll be intrigued to see if Breck Shea is actually still playing professional soccer in like a year or two. Like, I would not be shocked at all if that guy was like, this just isn't worth all the effort.
He just doesn't look like a guy that is mentally, like, needs it.
Yeah.
Like, if he didn't have soccer in his life, he would be a man lost at sea. He would just kind of roll on and do something else. Go back to painting.
I think painting is definitely in his future. Wearing weird pants.
Definitely like a clothing line mm-hmm. is in his future. A clothing line I will not be purchasing.
No, not me either. I'm a pretty fashion forward type of guy.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Breck Shea and I really have any sort of compatible fashion opinions.
I feel like you're talking about like a lot of like tank tops.
Yeah.
Trucker hats.
be intrigued to see if he continues to wear the tank tops in Vancouver.
That's a little tougher to pull off, especially right now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about fashion forward. Columbus Crew finally, I believe they were the last ones to release their new kits for 2017, keeping the same style with the secondaries, the black and gold secondaries. But a new primary kit is in, and it's what we want.
It's banana. The banana kit is back. Never should have left. I get what they were shooting for last year with the four Columbus kits. It didn't work in reality, unfortunately. Even the best ideas sometimes don't pan out. The Crew deserve to be playing in an all yellow kit. Like, it's just
that's how it's supposed to be.
What they are, and how you could ever move away from arguably the most recognizable uniform within all of Major League Soccer. How you could move away from that is mind-boggling. And they bring it back this year, and I'm more than elated to see them having done that.
I mean, that's like here in a couple of years, all of a sudden in Orlando going, yeah, we're not going to have a purple kit. What?
We're going to wear green.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just completely off the wall. So I think if they had gone a different direction with that other kit, I think everyone would have mostly been happy about that. But yeah, it's cool. They've got a great, you know, kind of checkered pattern down the inseams of the shirt itself, underneath the arms. Looks pretty awesome.
New shirt sponsor too.
Yeah.
An Acura.
Largest corporate or single year corporate sponsorship deal in Crew history, supposedly.
Yeah.
Which means they got a hefty amount of money to make that happen. So, hey, that's fantastic for them.
And for those of you not in Ohio, Acura, a bit of a local brand too. Actually, a lot of the Acuras you buy here in the U.S. are made in Ohio.
Yeah. If you're not particularly in the know about the automotive industry here, they're considered one of the new domestics. Acura owned by Honda. Honda also has a humongous presence in central Ohio. And a lot of those Acuras are actually made pretty damn close, actually just down the road. I think in Marysville?
Sounds right.
Yeah. Amazing plan. I had an opportunity to go through there when I was in college. You could literally eat off the floor of the place. It's spectacularly clean. But a big deal for the Crew, getting that new kit.
I do want to point out something. Last year, the Crew's kit was all about what?
Columbus.
Columbus. This year, the kit, they've mentioned the fact and showed off the fact that, and I don't remember the last time this has been the case, it had the Ohio flag on it.
Yeah, I don't know that that's ever happened before. I'm going to start by saying this much.
Okay. You know where I'm going.
I know exactly where you're going with this, and I'm probably going to abstain from the latter portion of the conversation, but this is something the Crew should have been doing ages ago. Ages ago. I wrote an article about this back when I used to write articles for this website as well.
Literally, back when there was words.
Yeah, literally words. Not just spoken words, but actual written ones. Basically begging, asking the Crew, guys, you're the only MLS team in all of Ohio. You have thousands of fans located outside the realm of Columbus. Reach out to those people. Make them a part of the brand. Get them to buy in. It's going to be beneficial for the club to do that. They've finally done that. So I applaud them for taking the advice that I gave them a while ago and have literally said to people within the organization, listen to the audience that you know is out there. Speak to the rest of Ohio when you're the team that currently occupies Ohio.
I guess I also have to point out one of the comments made during this press conference. Someone was asked about the decision to include the Ohio flag. This is actually our buddy Ben Faree up there. Was the one that asked this question, and the response he got back was, "We're proud of being Ohio's professional soccer club. It's part of our heritage."
There are other professional soccer teams in Ohio.
Shots fired? Shots fired, DJ?
Maybe. I find the timing
on behalf of myself and not DJ. Let me just say those shots were fired.
The timing was a little odd.
It was interesting. It was interesting contrast between what their message, their branding message last year and their branding message just this year could not be more different, and the timing of it could not be more interesting.
Peculiar. Peculiar. I will leave it at that.
There were a few other little domestic notes we need to hit on. One big one that we need to hit on. We had a big TV change happen.
Mm-hmm.
The rights were up for bid this week, and Turner Broadcasting has won the rights to the Champions League starting in fall of 2018.
What a bombshell that was.
This is insane.
Apparently, they came in super late into the negotiations, too. I think it was Fox who currently hold the rights.
Right.
I think ESPN were back in for them, too.
So that's been debated. Some outlets are reporting that ESPN did make a bid. Others are reporting that ESPN did not even bid in this one, which is insane to think that they wouldn't bid in this.
One, because everyone knows it's a growing competition as far as attention spans are concerned here in the U.S. But two, because it kind of continues this trend with European soccer at bare minimum, but also losing out on the World Cups.
We've mentioned this before. ESPN's portfolio is very small when you talk about soccer. They had Euros, I think, was really their last major competition they had rights to. They don't hold all the rights to U.S. men's national team matches anymore. Those are split between them and Fox. They pretty much just have, I mean, their main property is MLS.
Right.
And they only have one match a week.
I mean, I'll be honest, if they were only putting their resources and money into one league, I'd prefer it to be the domestic league, a U.S. company investing in the local league. I like that. I'm
sure, but
you
would imagine the self-proclaimed worldwide leader and a league that has owned the rights of the La Liga and has subleased the Premier League for years. Now, when soccer's at this great height of popularity, they're not in the game.
Yeah. But it is going, however, to a team that is, or a broadcasting network that is in the game, Turner.
Yeah, they're in the game now.
And look, I think the last time they hosted any sort of soccer on their channels was like back during the 90 World Cup, I think. So it's been a long time.
Wasn't like MLS on like TNN. I don't even know if that's the same company. In the day,
it might have been. I don't know. But it's been a long time, and they've not been a player outside of March Madness.
Their main properties are March Madness and NBA,
and what the Atlanta Braves.
Well, yeah, I mean that's transitioned to more just post. They get post TBS has postseason baseball, but not all of it. And
yeah. But I mean,
interesting, very interesting.
Interesting deal.
It's a new player in the game.
Everyone kind of panicked a little bit about this. Like, oh God, like
I think we always panic.
What if we get Joe Buck con games? You know, like I think that's kind of like the fear.
I think we're okay. I don't think we're going to get Joe Buck.
I think too. I
do think we will get some hilarious promos uttered by like, you know, Shaq and Charles Barkley during Inside the NBA, hysterical to watch.
Be great. Can't you see Charles Barkley just scoffing at the thought of soccer?
Like he's going to be like, you'll hear his disdain during like his live read.
Yeah. I really look forward to that. That will
and
be fantastic.
And Sevilla are going to be playing.
Yeah. Oh God. The butchering of the team names. Could you imagine?
You think if they had this matchup?
Could you imagine
Leicester versus Sevilla?
Or Galatasaray. You know, like a team like that. Fenerbahce. Like, keep going down Eastern European teams. Literally anyone out there. Shakhtar Donetsk.
Oh,
it would be amazing.
Now, I think the interesting thing is you mentioned their main property. March Madness. And I think this is where they beat out Fox and some of the other people that have thrown in bids is they have a lot of channels to work with. We see this during March Madness. They're able to throw shows or matches on all these different channels. hopefully we'll see that, you know, before, you know, this past couple of years, it's been Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2, and then they
Fox Soccer Channel.
Yeah, which, like, you're one of, like, 12 people that still get that. Yeah. The rest are all Irish pubs, mm-hmm. and then you.
Yes.
And then, like, they would sublease, like, one match to, like, ESPN2. This will all be Turner putting it on all their channels that you see during March Madness.
I think that's fantastic. I think what people are starting to realize, both with the Premier League and with the Champions League, at least in domestic broadcasting circles, is that you're not necessarily – like, every once in a while, you're going to get, like, a smash game where, like, everyone's going to pay attention. You're going to get good ratings. I think what they look at these competitions as is cumulative, the total number of eyeballs that you can get on all of your games, and being able to sell that as a package to sponsorships or sponsors. And I think that's really where the value in this is for Turner, is that they can put all of these games on and really exponentially increase the amount of eyeballs, because there are people all across this country from all walks and all these different areas of Europe and Africa and Asia, with players that are involved from all these places, they're going to watch these games. I think that's where that multi-channel value really comes into play for Turner. And
well, yeah. I mean, Turner is one of the, as far as like streaming also, I mean, Turner was streaming March Madness games before anybody was watching stuff online.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that though, there was something very interesting that happened in the bidding. And for those, the people that said that ESPN didn't bid, they pointed to one of the bids that did come in. A company called BAM Tech, which is owned by MLB Advanced Media. It's a media, like a media tech company that was going to buy the rights and then basically turn around and sell it off to, they work a lot with Disney, so obviously that would be ESPN. And basically, it would be a secondary distributor, essentially.
Weird.
Which I think is what we're going to start seeing happening.
Yeah. Kind of more of these sublettings.
Right. So, that didn't happen this time around, but something to maybe, you know, something to see on the horizon coming for us. Let's go to winners and wankers.
Yeah. It is about that time. Reaching the end of the show, I will start off with my winner this week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give my winner to Jose Mourinho.
Really?
Not because he lifted a title today. That is literally nothing to do with this. The reason I'm giving Jose Mourinho my winner of the week this week is because the first presser that he held after Claudio Ranieri was sacked, he walked out with a CR on his jacket in honor of Claudio Ranieri, which I love seeing cross managerial support. I don't know what it is about that I really enjoy. But it was a very heartfelt kind of moment from Jose, which I feel like we don't get a whole lot of those from him, where he was very clearly upset at the idea that Ranieri was sacked, and is a guy who had won the title a year prior and then lost his job the season after that. I think Mourinho very much felt some commiseration with Ranieri, and he offered up this line. He said, "I thought last season when I was sacked as a champion, I thought it was a giant negative thing. Now I realize that was peanuts compared to what happened to Claudio." And I thought that was just a touch of class from a guy like Mourinho, obviously trying to get his in the statement as well. But I really, really liked that he showed that type of support for someone who he felt like was unfairly dismissed. Your winner.
Yeah, my winner, it has to be Atlanta United, 30,000 season ticket holders.
I mean, that's insane. Yeah. Only two teams all of last year, I think, averaged more than 30,000 in attendance, period.
Yeah.
Atlanta has that in the bag now.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Every single game.
That's nailed down.
30,000 in the bag, which is amazing. Makes you wonder what was going on with the Atlanta Silverbacks, where they weren't able to tap into that market a little bit.
Seriously, yeah.
Yeah. Wankers. How about your wanker? Aside obviously from
Warren Beatty.
Warren Beatty, yeah. Make sure that you're giving this to the correct wanker as well.
Okay. My wanker goes to Sutton United.
Oh boy.
Well, it really sucks. So our podcast comes out, and we were sitting there telling the great, oh, wasn't that great? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fat guy at the pie.
Hey, it's hysterical.
Wayne Shaw for president.
Yeah.
Like, literally before our podcast got, like, I was even started editing it, he had already had to resign from his position,
mm-hmm.
and it was just such a horrible thing. Oh, my goodness, what a disaster. And then it kind of, you know, that was Monday. And then we were all sad about the situation, that what was a fun, lovable story kind of had that dark ending with Wayne Shaw having to ride off into the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly, you know, was trying to essentially match fix in his own right, pie fix, by purposely eating that pie so that his buddies could win those parlay bets.
Mm-hmm.
Sutton United this weekend had their keeper go down middle of the match,
mm-hmm.
and had to turn to have Wayne Shaw.
Wayne Shaw's not there
and
anymore.
Apparently, it was too short of a turnaround time to hire or bring in a backup keeper. So they didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
So when they actually needed Wayne Shaw to trot out on the pitch, which would have been awesome to see, would have just continued that awesome story of Sutton United just being the most enjoyable story in the world, they didn't have him because they made him resign and said their fullback had to come in.
Yeah, I mean, it was a total mess. And my wanker goes to a player in this scenario as well. I didn't give mine to Sutton United. I understand their position a little bit. I think he breached FA violations as far as their regulations, as far as betting goes. I can understand them needing to do that and putting him under that pressure. But I think the party that deserves the most blame in this entire scenario, Sun Bets. This is the Sun.
This is their shirt sponsor.
This is their shirt sponsor, by the way. This is the Sun, everyone's least favorite English tabloid newspaper. Their betting arm. Already, you're talking about nefarious newspaper mixed with nefarious business practice.
Yeah.
And you're already flirting with danger anyway. Now, when you add them into being a shirt sponsor for the hot kind of hipstery choice team of the moment, disaster was likely to happen. And Piegate was the direct result of that because they were the ones who allowed the parlay bets for the option of the pie eating to begin with. They made this a realistic scenario that was unbelievably achievable, not only because there's a gigantic fat man that sits on Sutton United's roster as their backup goalkeepers. I'm doing air quotes here.
That's a large reason why.
It's a large reason why. Why is a ridiculous bet like that even allowed to be something that's allowed to be played? Like, why should that be something that a company should be allowed to collect money on? Because we're not talking about someone trying to make a throw-in happen. One of the most famous kind of examples of players betting and actually outing themselves about it at a later time is Mark Letissier. He played for Southampton. Fantastic player. If you've never heard of Letissier, go and watch some of the things he's done. He was a real joy to watch. But he had a humongous betting problem. And one of his favorite stories he tells is how he had taken out a bet on himself, or at least his Southampton side, to get a throw-in within the first 10 seconds of the game. And they had a kickoff, and the idea was that he was going to kick it immediately out of bounds and get his money on it. But then he had to scramble around like an idiot because someone didn't pass to him like they were supposed to, and he had to go and tackle one of his own teammates to put the ball out of bounds. That was a lot of work that he had to make happen to get that bet to fall through. When you have a gigantic fat man sitting on your bench that could easily get his hands on a pie to eat... That's something.
Yeah, the man that was in the pub. It was in the stadium pub at halftime.
It wasn't even an issue to begin with. So that should not have been something that would have been bettable. It's nothing that would have ever realistically happened in another match. They created that scenario to happen, and now a guy who you can't fault him for trying to take advantage of the situation that was presented in front of him. Everyone was making fun of him for being a fat guy. Tell me you don't know a fat guy that makes like all of his like. Social interactions about him being the funny fat guy. You know what I mean? Like everyone knows that. So my wanker definitely goes to Sun Bets for creating this ridiculous situation to begin with.
You know what the craziest part about all this is? Sutton won that match.
I know. It's insane. It's insane.
Sutton won the match. And Simon Downer, the guy who the fullback that came in goal. And by the way, this was like 15 minutes into the match. Only allowed one.
Not too bad.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. As always, if you have comments, questions, concerns, topics you want us to talk about, shoot us an email, contact@wrongsideofthepond.com. You can also get us on Twitter. Jeremy's at Jeremy Lanch. You can find me at wrongsideofpond. Get involved with the show, and we will squeeze you in some way.
Alrighty.
Have fun, kids. Don't give out the wrong award to the wrong people.